Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Podcast, presented by sportsshoes.com. I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Every Sunday we get together with a guest from the distance running world,
giving you an insight into the lives and training of some of the UK's best athletes and coaches.
You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and all major podcast streaming services.
You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Sunday Podcast, where we post about our past and present guests, host giveaways and much more.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoy the episode.
Right, guys, welcome back. First bonus episode in a while. Matt and I here. We've enjoyed the World Champs. We're just thinking about dissecting it one more time. And we'll go from there, to be honest. We've also got a little, there was a press release from World Athletics yesterday, I believe. So we'll go through that as well. Matt, you all good, mate? You recovered from some sleep?
This is it, mate. Very, very sleep deprived. I was working through the night, 5 p.m. till usually about 5 or 6 a.m. Anyone who knows me, that is a struggle for me.
Yeah, you're normally a 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. kind of guy. So,
So I'm back now. And I'm back into routine, mate. We're all good.
Good man. Save some of the best races till last. Like, obviously, I don't know if that's just recency bias a bit, but 5Ks, 800s, did not disappoint. Like, particularly, I'd say that the men's five and the women's eight, as we kind of said they would throughout the week. To be honest, should we start with the fives?
Yeah, all right then, mate.
Yeah, so 5K, I believe I want to pat myself on the back a bit. I did say I thought Jakob would get the win. I don't believe I was very...
It's more of a passing comment then.
Yeah, I wasn't like 100% Jakob's going to win, but I believe I did say it. And also at the start of the champs, I said it would be good for us as fans if he lost the 15 and came back and won the 5, because it's a good story. So I think everyone would have enjoyed that race. He dominated it. His interview afterwards was fantastic. If people haven't seen that, I'd recommend watching it.
They always are.
Talks about how he didn't want kind of the media writing about how he won it in a tactical race or he had a sprint finish. He wanted to just prove that he was a superior athlete and he's the best 5K guy in the world. He was asked if he's a better 5K guy than a 1500 guy now. He said he always has been. It was great to watch.
Yeah, that was an interesting point as well. Seems like his passions just lie with the 1500. Also said, you know, about him leading, is it easier to lead a 1500 or a 5K? And he said a 5K. Interesting point. You know, he just said, you know, the only reason it's difficult to lead is because you're the one pushing the pace. But he said, you know, if you're good enough and you can be up front and you're not pushing the pace, then effectively it's just the same as sitting in second, third, providing obviously weather conditions are good. So I thought that was interesting. Mate, I think with that whole 5K as well, looking at like Cheptegei and the Baregas of this world, I think it just proves how hard it is to double in the 5 and the 10. I think we just took Farah and Bekele and stuff for granted because it was almost just expected if you win the 10, you go and win the 5, do you know, or if you're capable of winning the 5, you win the 10. And I think it's a lot trickier than, you know, that we give credit for, just because through our lifetime we've almost always seen people double, and that's just kind of the norm.
No, 100%. And I was actually thinking that as they were running around, I was thinking to myself, wow, if Chelimo wins this, he's starting to move towards that bracket. Obviously he's got his world records, but I don't know if people do, but for me personally, I don't put him anywhere near kind of Farah and Bekele.
Me neither, but yeah,
in terms of like the great distance runners, like track distance runners, at all, like despite his world records. But I was thinking to myself as they were running around, like first couple of laps when he took out 2:36 for the K, so pretty swift. I was like, oh, fair play, he's actually going to take it to him, like use the kind of clear like advantage he has of being the best in the world, like time wise. And I was thinking, yeah, he's going to start getting up towards those names, but like you say, couldn't deliver. But it is. It's tough, isn't it? And I think as well, it definitely shows you how good Farah was in that they tried like to go team tactics against him and things like that. And he still kind of would come on top. Because I think that's what it needed. It needed like all the Ethiopians or all the Kenyans. And I think at one point they were almost beckoning. I think it looked like there were some tactics they'd planned that weren't sort of going to plan. But I guess it's hard to pull off tactics in the heat. And when you're moving at certain paces, like people can't always just do what they plan to do in those.
Yeah. You know, I'm just surprised how, you know, I think Cheptegei actually had intentions to make the race fast. And I think he thought, you know, the Kenyans, it looked at one point, like you say, through that first K, it looked like the Kenyans then took it up and it looked like it was going to be a quick race from there on out. But they just didn't push the pace. You know, the pace slacked, and I just think, I think it just must be terrifically hard for them to actually clip off, you know, 61, 60, I mean, 62s really, you know. Cheptegei obviously didn't see him up for it. He ended up finishing ninth. And even the Kenyans, when they took the lead, that, you know, Kip Keria, or I know him as Kimeli, you know, on the circuit, they call him Kimeli, but, you know, and he, you know, again, he took the lead and looked like he wanted to kind of drive the pace a little bit. There's a few 64s and then it kind of slipped to 65s. And I just think, you know, how hard it must be for those guys. I think it proves, you know, when it comes to a championship, you've got a 5K heat in your legs. This isn't a one-off 5K. How much, you know, and it's the one-off 5K was still half decent. You know, they, I think the one of the heats was around 13:10 to be fair. I think it's 13:13 or something. So similar to what they won it in, you know. So, you know, they've got that in their legs. It's a championship, you know, all sorts. But I was kind of almost surprised how easy it was for Yaka. We know he's a terrific talent. But like you say, you have got guys in there who are specific, pure 5K guys, you know, and they're incredibly quick as well. Cheptegei is a world record holder. You know, Grant Fisher's run 12:53. Mohammed's sub 12:50. And this is why I was kind of thinking how hard it is to double, because the likes of Mohammed, Grant Fisher and people like that as well. And I was like, maybe if they'd just done one race, they could have got on that podium. I mean, I've got no doubts if Fisher didn't have the 10K in his legs, he probably could have got on that podium, man.
Yeah, well, you could just see how hard he was working down the back straight. That's when I thought he was in a great position. With 200 to go, just the contrast between him and Jakob, like Fisher was just fighting already.
Yeah.
But like you say, they've got 15K in their legs. But at the same time, Jakob's got three rounds of 1,500.
I know. I know he has. But,
done like 1,500 races or workouts, like they do burn still.
Yeah. But like you say, you know, he even said he trains like a 5K guy. So those, I would expect he's going to recover off those 15s a lot quicker than, do you know what I mean, than anyone else. But I thought he had a terrific run. He absolutely pissed it in the end, to be honest. He ran away with that. He was jogging the last sort of 50 meters or so. Had he driven to the line, he could have absolutely murdered them all. Which
well,
he
virtually was 26, but I'm pretty sure the first 100 of that is in from 200 to go to 100 to go would have been ridiculous.
To be fair, I looked it up, man. I think it was 13.1. That like the 100 round the bend.
Yeah.
And then it was like 26.7 for his last 200. So, but yeah, like to do that round the bend is pretty impressive. Surprised with the medalist, super surprised. Krop, I mean, Krop looked good in his heat, man. He ran away with his heat, so fair play. But Oscar Chelima, I mean, if you were to say like Borrega was going to come, my God, Borrega came 12th. I was going to say 10th, but I've just double checked the results. Borrega was 12th, Cheptegei 9th, Gjelcha 8th, you know, Nicholas Kimeli. This guy, Framp, ran pretty much 12:45 in Rome earlier in the year, or 12:46. You know, it was ridiculous. He comes 7th, Grant Fisher, Moa Ahmed, Luis Grijalva. I mean, let's talk about him. Terrific run. Comes with, you know, but this always happens though.
And this is what I saw, I was going to say, just on what you said as well. Like, it depends on the guys who finish down were the ones who are racing to win.
Yeah, right. And, you know, yeah, Brager's head's probably gone. He's got dropped with
two. Well, they're trying to go with Jakob to beat him. And so when they hit 100 to go, their legs are literally gone.
Yeah.
They're completely swimming. Whereas, like, if you're
racing. That's what happened to Mohammed and stuff as well.
Yeah. If you're just racing for bronze, you're probably like, I can sit off this, don't need to make a move because a lot of these guys are going to come back to me.
Mm. Yeah, and like I don't even think Grijalva was racing for bronze, man. Like, he was just racing, right? Yeah. He was just looking at every position, which is how you should race. But, you know, I swear it always happens, you know, when you come like fourth or fifth, it's always like you come fourth with a super late run and take everyone who's dying on the home straight. And it's like, I could have got third. But it's like, maybe when you're trying to shoot for third, you can't sit back in eighth. You've got to be in like fourth, fifth, third position fighting for that spot. So don't get me wrong, terrific run from him. But I was kind of like, well, you know, someone was going to have a good last home straight the way that race was panning out. And they were all just dying a death on the home straight, basically.
Yeah.
No, so, but I mean, I guess like surprise, I just think more than ever, times mean so little in our sport.
Well, I don't want to like always beat in on the Bahamans and stuff, but we said it indoors when they put on that meet and they all ran these crazy fast times. We were like, are they going to feature in the champs? Like, we think not.
Yeah, I think...
Play to them. They're featured. They've been involved in races. They've definitely been up there. It's not like they've been complete nobodies.
Yeah.
But...
See, this is a question that I was gonna ask you, man. I was going to say, do you think that the way Jerry coaches is very, like, group-orientated, and obviously it produces incredible athletes, incredible results, but maybe to build a champion, someone who's going to really, you know, dominate that event and win championship titles, do you need to be a little bit more individualized? Do you need to have that one-to-one coaching a bit more? You know, because when you do look at champions and you do look, yes, they train in groups, they train with people, but they are the main focus.
Yeah, I know.
That coach, you know,
without like going and watching their training or actually knowing
exactly anything that you don't know,
it's so hard to say. Obviously, like we know a lot about the type of training they do physically in terms of like the sessions, the mileage, that sort of thing, but we don't really know. Like, I've never gone to watch them train. I've never seen a proper video. You see, they put out videos which are quite smart in that they're it look really nice and presentable and like shows off all the kit and the facilities and things. We don't actually ever see Jerry coaching in them.
Mm.
Like, there's not really anything out there that's that really gives that away. So I wouldn't want to kind of talk down on that. I know what you're saying. I think there definitely needs to be that, and I just think
like
an element of training that like helps like your instincts and your racing brain. And I think racing like in like massive trains all the time, and also not putting yourself up against like some of the best athletes. Like, they won't even race on the circuit. They'll make their own race, and fair enough. Like, it's nice to be able to have that. And your teammates sacrifice themselves. Like, if you need to run a qualifying time, fair enough, do that. But to have that as your only meet, like, I would like to see him pop up on the Diamond League. Because with the Diamond League, it's not like they always go and follow the pacer every time. So even though Diamond League set up for times, it does turn into a bit of back and forth sometimes.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, you know, it's almost like potluck who has a good champs. And I feel like that's very much the same with the Kenyans and the Ethiopians. You know, they all go on these training camps, they train in terrific groups, but it is just kind of potluck who's managed to get it right on the day because, you know, they're all doing the same workouts, they're all doing the same sessions. And it's like, you know, Fisher had a good champs this time around, Mohammed before, you know, Woody Kincaid was in awesome shape, you know, a year or so ago as well. Like, and it's very much like the Ethiopians are the same. Do you know who is actually going to be the one going to contend for a medal with them? Kenya are the same. And I just think sometimes do you just need that like real sort of one-to-one specific edge to kind of really like install that winning mindset in someone and, you know, build almost a champion, you know, because, you know,
well, yeah, and
what does a coach say? What does a coach say to his athletes when, you know, does he turn around to Mohammed and say, "Look, Mohammed, Fisher's better than you at the moment. Just go out there, help Fisher." Do you know what I mean? Like, does he say that? Does he say you're gonna, you know, I don't know. I doubt he does. He probably thinks they both got a good enough chance of winning, but deep down, you know,
yeah, and the only one who is like the most kind of champion-esque is Cheptegei.
Yeah, and his group is built around him pretty much. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I know what you're saying.
You look at every other event as well, like 15. I mean, Whiteman's perfect example of it, man. Like, perfect. I mean, Jakob's another perfect example. You know, they really are. So it's, yeah. I don't know what Faye Kipyegon does, but God, she's just a freak of a talent. But yeah, you know, when you look at the other events, they are very much centered towards, you know, there's this one individual and they're against the rest of the world, you know. But don't get me wrong, like, obviously this whole group environment produces incredible results, but I just wondered if it doesn't.
Yeah.
You're the champion, if you like, you know, maybe. It's tricky. And like, when you look at the whole like Mo Farah and Galen Rupp thing as well, like Salazar, it's like one of them was always going to be the champion.
Mm.
And as soon as like Farah kind of got that name, it's almost like, obviously we don't know the ins and outs, but I think mentally it's kind of like, how do you cope with that if you're Rupp? Do you ever like go on to
champion? I think it might have helped them like being like, I don't know if it helped, one was American, one was running for Britain. Like,
yeah.
That helped a bit. Like,
Well, I think different.
It was always them against the rest of the world as well. So like,
yeah.
They're the only ones like competing at that time. I guess apart from like you had Legat for like some of those championships from the US as well with Rupp.
Yeah. I think different events and stuff help a little bit as well. You know, like
Rupp was always going to be like
Jager was.
Farah was always going to be 15, like 5 type thing. Like, do you know what I mean? It was always going to be a bit of...
Yeah.
So.
But like, I also feel like, imagine you're training with someone, they're just spanking your ass in workouts. And then you're going into a race and you want to win that race, but you know, they're like smashing you in workouts and you know, they're fitter than you. And it's, that must be very, you know, it takes a real sort of determined champion to...
Yeah. Be well, able to- I wonder how like someone like Mark Scott feels in like those sorts of races. Obviously the guys around 12:57 indoors. Part of that training with Woody Kincaid, who would have made that final if he didn't fall. Mohamed, Grant Fisher, like Grant Fisher's come fourth in a 5K. Like Mark Scott's clearly a talent, and I wonder how that affects him, because it must be tough knowing that, let alone the rest of the guys. But I don't know, maybe his training was going great and he just didn't get it right on the day. But like, it must be tough going into those races thinking, like from the race results anyway, I'm like this far away from Grant Fisher, without Cheptegei, Jakob, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it must be so hard like being involved in the groupless.
Yeah, sometimes if you were distant from that, then you just go in there, you don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? So
he was training in the UK with a group built around him.
Yeah. It's an interesting...
The camp should be better, but you probably wouldn't have run those times. And
yeah.
So,
but this is what I'm saying. I just feel like it's getting to a point where I just, you know, I think times are just becoming even more so irrelevant, especially in the way that races are getting set up and stuff, you know. And like you say, this champs is pretty, I mean, Oscar Chelimo coming third, I mean, God, that guy is like, gets dropped all the time on the circuit. I mean, Krop, fair enough, Jakob, fair enough, obviously. But like you say, Grijalva's up there, you know, PB wise. I mean, that was 13:10 was the season's best for him. I think his PB is like 13:06 or something. You know, if you looked at that start list before the race, you're thinking, no way is he going to come fourth, you know?
Yeah.
Fabulous. It was a very exciting race. And I think if there's one person you wanted to win, it was Jakob for me. Like, it was so good.
Oh, yeah, it's after the 15.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Anyway, so should we move to the 800s or women's 5 quick?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the women's race was pretty good as well. I'd say not quite as good as the men's, but
hey, 1500 runner won that one.
Yeah, well. I do think if like the races are how you expect them to be, like not super quick, like if you're the best or like one of the best in the world over say like 5k, you like the 10 at the champs is perfect for you if you're a 5k 10k type person. And the same like for Jakob, if like you're Olympic champion in 15, but you like train like a 5k, then run it,
the pace is steady, right? The pace is like, it's not electric, but it's steady enough to like drop people who, you know, don't have a, do you know what I mean, just can't hang with the pace basically.
Yeah.
And then there's a kick. So Segar looks supreme, very similar to the way Jakob ran. Do you know what I mean? Kind of an extended drive for home,
and just look very controlled the whole way around, like facial expressions and do you know what else I thought looked really good all the way around was Gide. And I was thinking, but I just think it's just too, I think she surprised a lot of people with how good her kick was in the 10.
Yeah.
Because she's become almost a bit known for like having these like crazy fast times, but just not having that last kind of sprint in the last 100. But she looked really good, but yeah, obviously, unfortunately for her, faded. But I guess it's tough again coming back from that 10K.
You can't I just think, you know, can't underestimate those 10Ks. They were both pretty hard races as well. So,
well, they ran so fast, particularly the women like this.
Yeah.
I thought Hassan was might do it at one point, like when she made the move down the back straight. I thought, wow. But yeah, again, faded completely.
So, I mean, I know Jakob is perfect at this, but another note on him, he didn't really go with that early pace, that 2:36. He was very much near the back of the field.
But they were all running the same speed though.
Yeah, but it's like when Farah does it, like when Farah, he Jakob probably ran 2 40s, right? They ran like 236, 244. You know, and Farah used to do it, that you just can't really, even if he works as a team, it's like, how can you ruin this guy's race? Because he'll just be there at the right time. So whatever you do, you kind of, you're running yourself out. But, and I only mentioned that because obviously the women's race was very much team tactic orientated. Sharing the pace, which is actually, I do love to see that as well. And it's like with, this is what I'm saying about the whole Bowman and the whole Jerry thing as well. Like, you know, there must be someone who's in brilliant shape, you know, and you can't hang a medal around anyone's neck, but before the race, but you know.
But the Bowmans do that for USAs.
How cool. Exactly. Yeah, you're right. They do it for, yeah. They do
it for USAs. Yeah, he gets a pace in the five.
Yeah.
So, and like, I almost think with that as well, I think that almost hinders them when it comes to the world champs. I'm not saying that they like manipulate like how,
They should race it like they're racing. Like,
yeah, because they like they just make it a lot easier for their guys to make the team. And like, fair enough, like give them the best chance possible. But at the same time, like they're not, these guys aren't trying to make teams. They're trying to win medals.
Yeah.
So like, have some challenges throughout the season rather than. I remember they did it with the worst example or the best example, however you want to look at it. Or that I saw was do you remember indoors with Ryan Hill.
Yeah.
He entered six guys for the 3K and five of them dropped out and they just paced it.
Yeah, that's bonkers.
For the world indoor trials, I was like, it's just the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
But yeah, no, they're just, you know, and I do think, you know, these countries, they could maybe use a bit more teamwork, but like the Ethiopians do, it'd be pretty easy to counteract, you know, so...
would be cool to see like Mark Scott, Woody Kincaid, Mohamed, and Grant Fisher.
Imagine if you just decided you're
doing. Because yeah, they all can all run sub 13. Like,
well, technically,
together.
Yeah.
Then
yeah, and that is almost basic. That is what lost Jakob his 1500 title. He reckons anyway, the fact that he was fighting with the two Kenyan athletes, wasting his energy. He had to work really hard to get round them when the pace was already hot, and he said it ruined his race and it definitely ruined their race. You know, I think we said the other day anyway, I still think Whiteman would have won, but you know, whatever. But like, it would be pretty easy to do that in one of these endurance races as well. Like, you just got to box Jakob in. Like, obviously you got to do what's fair, but you know, if you actually wanted to, you know, really go to it and get a winner, I think it would be, you could definitely do it.
Yeah. Do you think the other athletes in that field were like not thinking about Jakob too much after he lost the 15?
After he lost, I don't know.
They were all thinking about Cheptegei instead. And
yeah.
The poor thing with Cheptegei, oh, let's slow it down because that's the better option.
Yeah. I mean, Cheptegei's got a good kick, obviously.
Yeah. It's kicks on back. I'd say the way to beat Cheptegei is to have it like.
You can't, but I see a lot of people on Twitter just saying, obviously, they just let the race go slow. And I'm just like, I don't think they let it. I think it would be very, very hard to go and run sub 13 minutes. And the problem you got is, where do you draw the line? Because even if you run sub 13 minutes, chances are Jakob's still going to be there and he's still going to outkick you. So, you know. Anyway, mate, we spoke about our race quite a bit. Yeah, women's race was very similar. It is almost weirdly similar and was very good as Ben Segai winning that. 800s, because they were... let's start with Keely, because I feel like she could have won that. She just... Obviously, she could have won. But it almost just looked like she didn't want to... It looked like her thought process was like, I don't want to push now because it might get me DNF'd or something, but... She could have easily pushed through that gap. There was a small gap. She could have pushed through it. In my head, I'm thinking, if you got past Mu then, she's not coming back. She's tying up. You've probably given her a little nudge anyway. And like, that's throwing her off. She's going to tie up. You're going to win, mate. But I think, had she had done that, would she have got DQ'd? Probably, seeing as it's Mu, seeing as it's in America on home turf. Like, but anywhere else in the race, it wouldn't have been a DQ. We're talking like hypothetical scenarios here, but she definitely could have just gone, right, I'm going.
I didn't think there were points where she had enough room though.
At the 110 mark, for me, she should have just squeezed through that gap and gone for it. Like, who cares if you nudge her a little bit? That's racing. There was a gap there to be had. If you did nudge her, brilliant, because then she's just going to come out the back door because you're going to throw her straight off. Like, and I know that's probably not a good thing to say, but seriously, I was like, it's a
world. Would you just go on the shoulder?
And then, yeah, it's a world championship title up for grabs. When Moo was drifting wide around that bend, I was like, what are you doing? Like, there's a gap there, but.
Well, she almost did it perfectly, though, because she didn't leave so much of a gap that Keely thought, I'm going for it.
Mm.
And it would have meant that if Keely wanted to go past, she'd have had to, like, completely sidestep out. So,
oh, you just needed to go for that. She's going to watch that back and kick herself. I know it. And then the way Moo just kind of drifted back in, and just as soon as she did that, I was like, well, Keely, now you're not going to get by, because if you make a move now, you will be DQ'd. Do you know what I mean? I think I could, like, Keely ran as close second as she could run. But I was just gutted, because I was like, you could have won that race.
Yeah, it was interesting, wasn't it? I'd love to know how kind of. So did you not think she was like all out in the home straight, and she was just?
Oh, look, don't get me wrong. Obviously, like, everyone's all out in the home straight, and she would have been all out. But this is what I'm talking about—that real like grit racing scenario. You just got to go for it. Like, when things open up, like, I don't care if you're all out, you have to just go on the gas just to get past her. Because what I'm saying is, had she got past her, she probably would have given her a little, like, you know, a little nudge. It would have thrown Moo off. She then would have been leading, and I think Moo would have just been tying up. And Keely, don't forget, psychological boost. She's getting that boost. Oh my God, I've just come past Moo. I'm now going to tear it to the finish. Like, I don't care what you say, but in that home straight, if you're overtaking someone, if you overtake anyone in that home straight, you do get a boost. It's a weird thing. If you get overtaken in a home straight, you're tying up and you're done. Do you know what I mean? But if you overtake people in a home straight, chances are you always find more and you don't really slow down. And she just needed to do that. She really did need to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear what you're saying. I think it was, great run from both of them. Like, to be fair, like, I think, it was 156. I believe it was as well. Like, so not
as quick. Cool. Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's what it will take to beat a thing, Mo, is to run a 155 like every time. You're like, really? I think she's,
I think, I don't know, man. Like, I do think the pressure's on Mo a little bit, and I'm not sure she's gonna. I think, take it this way, she won't win the next World Championships. You know, it'll be Keely will win, or someone else will win.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, weird, because I've seen a lot on Twitter about how. They're going to be like battling it out for the next like 10 years, and they may well could be, but at the same time, like, so hard to say.
Yeah. So,
because if you'd said that, I don't know, a year and a half ago, people would be like, what?
Yeah.
So
there's, that's true. Look how quick things have changed in a year and a half.
Yeah. Right? Like, look how quick they've risen to like the top. So like, you can't say they're going to stay there. And I hope they do.
I do think Keely will. I think they
both will be up there.
Be around for a long time.
But, finals and stuff. But to say it's just going to be them two, like, back and forth. It's good. It's good for the sport, though. Like, if that rivalry just keeps building, it's good. Mm-hmm. Obviously, most seasons now, like, finish in terms of championships. But obviously, Keely's got Euros, and she's doing commies as well.
Yeah, it's a weird season for those who, like, you know, Americans, Africans, you know, who don't have commies and don't have, you know, Euros as well, because they are pretty much done. So, but yeah, I think Keely's going to go on. Obviously, she's going to, you know, like to see her get a gold at Euros, gold at commies. I think it's perfectly doable. Heavy favourite going into all of those. It's just, you know, how can she cope with the fatigue and stuff? But it was a really good race, I've got to admit. And that last 100 was so exciting. And I think Keely is going to, you know, next year definitely going to come out and probably, you know, she would be my favorite, even though she was second this year for a world title. I think the one thing that was good, actually, well, not good, good for Moo, is that she now has a bye for next year's world champs. Mm. And that's huge, because that is any American's weakness, is the fact they have to go through that American trials.
Yeah.
It's so strenuous and stressful. And you could even see Americans at this world champs. I felt like, you know, a few interviews with a few of them as well, that, you know, I think it was Emily Infield said, you know, coming off such a high at the world trials, you know, for some Americans, that is their world champs.
Oh, yeah. And it's weird, because it's so good for their sport domestically. but yeah, their world performances is so damaging. Because I always think that if our trials were anywhere near like the US trials, we could bring in so many more fans, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely. But how would it hinder?
Yeah. I think we do like great at the champs themselves, the size of the country and things like that. So it's,
yeah. So, but anyway, man, so that was the women's eight, the men's eight, career. That was incredible. This is what I'm saying about times. This guy came into it, hadn't broken 145 this year, runs 143 on the day. He gave an awesome interview as well. I got to admit, he said, you know, you still got to remember he's the quickest in the field. He's run 142.0.
And the Olympic champ,
talent. Yeah, Olympic champ, back to back. Huge. And I think we guessed the wrong Algerian, didn't we? Didn't I say that? And that Moula guy was going to feature. It was Sajadi.
You knew which one was which, to be honest.
Yeah, to be fair. But yeah, they got right up there. Looked smooth. And obviously,
Arop. Arop was. he must have been hurting that. That's true.
Yeah, a big 3,200. I think this is what we're talking about when you go for a medal. You know, Arop was like, you know, my best chance now is to just drill this 3,200. That's what he did and managed to hang on in there. So, but that was a very good race as well. Career was impressive.
Yeah, it's just that head rock. Just so, I don't know, you just don't expect to see.
I think I was saying, like, defending titles is just not easy. And then doing it in an event like the 800 when you might not necessarily be on your A game, it's just even harder, you know?
Yeah, it's just even like making the final. Like, you go in as, like, he could have easily not made the final.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's why, yeah, the 800 is so, unless you're, well, like, apart from like Mo and Keeley, the semi-finals are just ridiculously hard. I mean, they're the only people who looked like very chilled in those, really.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So it just makes the whole championship so much more stress. And I mean, we'll get on to speaking about rounds in a second. Overall, it's a good champs, I think. But I think you put it on your Instagram story, and I'm in agreement with you. It was not as good as London 2017.
No, I think, I mean, a lot of people are saying best world champs ever. Look, what made it pretty special, I think, especially towards the end, was the fact we saw a few world records.
I mean, it's the fact that last year we had COVID year Olympics, and it's that recency bias. It's because we've just seen it.
Mm.
We watched it last week, and
yeah.
We haven't had a champs with full stadiums in years. So, like, we're thinking, oh, it's amazing.
The whole full stadium thing, don't get me wrong, like, it was full, but there was, even on that last session.
But the stadium's not a full stadium in itself. So you got
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, stands.
Yeah.
No, it's not. Whereas, and that's what we were saying when we were chatting yesterday. It was just like that, you know, we're filling an Olympic stadium in London.
Yeah, I'm just Googling the I just want to Google the capacity. All right. So 25,000 is the capacity of that stadium.
And there's no way there was more than like 20,000 people in there at the time.
Yeah, there was quite a few. Even on that last final day, there was still a few empty seats. I was thinking, what's going on, man? You got the 4x4s, like men's 5K, women's 8, like Athing Mu, like Mondo jumped a world record. There was a few empty seats kicking around. 25,000. God, London 2017, we sold out 60,000 pretty much every session. I know, like, I was there for Mo Farah's 10K when he won, and it was outrageous. I don't think after about five laps, I was off. Like, everyone in that stadium was stood up, clapping and cheering every time he came round. So it was just constant noise. The noise would follow the athletes. And yeah, like I said, I didn't sit down for the best part of 20 laps. No way. The atmosphere in London absolutely murdered Eugene. Don't get me wrong. Like, it was incredible. And like, that stadium is incredible. But yeah, he still probably only had 20. I think they probably had more fans in Qatar and Doha. Like, towards the end of those sessions, that stadium was packed. I know at the start, but look at a race on the final day or the final few days. Look at it when Barshim was jumping in the high jump. Stadium was packed. The atmosphere was ridiculous. That's just on the atmosphere. We've had a few people message in as well and say, you know, disappointed in the marathon course. It was literally round an urban estate. It was on like cycle paths and stuff, like, you know, it was potholes, and it was just, that was a bit weird for me. I've got to admit, it was a bit underwhelming. That's probably the word I'd use, underwhelming.
Yeah. I'll be interested to hear from the athletes, and I'm sure we will. Too many hints away, but like, I'd be interested to hear on the athletes and how they found it, because I guess if they liked the fact it was, seemed to be a quicker course and they ran decent times for a championship, especially this time of year, if they would prefer that. But I guess for spectators, it's nice seeing, almost like seeing a bit of the city and things. But then I guess that is what Eugene's like, so you can't they can't just fabricate what.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I guess they can't. So I mean, we can't complain too much there. But I mean, I did, you know, I did pick up on that as well. We had a message in, but what else, man? I mean, I guess the one disappointing thing was like time zones. You can't do anything about that, but. It was just weird for me that they put both 10K finals at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Good for a Brit, but that was odd. And even the evening sessions were finishing before 8 o'clock Eugene time. The last event was usually like 7:30 or quarter to 8.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, what? Like, surely just put prime 2 hours of athletics, like 8:30 to 9:30 at night under the lights. The stadium looked awesome under the lights. And then that way, the rest of the world would have had a better chance of watching it as well, because it would have been like, what, 5:30 in the morning or whatever. But yeah, I don't know. I just found it weird how the events were like sort of 6:30, 7 o'clock at night.
I mean, that is normally just TV things though, because I can't remember who we spoke to. I feel like we spoke
probably
to
is.
They were talking about how when the champs are in other places, it's normally dictated on what the Americans want at what time.
Yeah.
The Americans have loads of 400 guys that year. They choose a time that's appropriate for American viewership. And then whether it's in Tokyo or London, it will be moved based off what the Americans want anyway. So they, I reckon this year they must have had exactly what they wanted. So fair play to maybe, maybe they were like, well, no one wants to watch a 10K, so we'll chat in the middle of the day. But I was quite happy about that.
Yeah, we were happy about that. But yeah, so I definitely, and it had the world records, like Sydney McLaughlin was a freak. Mondo was a freak. I mean, that Nigerian hurdler as well, Amusan, was a freak. But that, wait, just on that race though, that was sketchy. So I remember I tweeted, I think the clock's wrong. There's no way the whole field just ran that quick. They all looked baffled as well. Like, you would know, you know, as an athlete, and they, you know, and there was no sort of even warning beforehand that these people were indicating that sort of shape. And then it happened in the final again. And then I went on Twitter, saw Michael Johnson tweet exactly the same thing. He said that he reckons the clock's wrong. He said, there's no way that just happened. And that's a whole nother discussion, because it's like, well, what happens if the clock is wrong in some of these sprints events? It's a little off. And
it's like they were saying, they reckon the blocks were dodgy as well.
Well, yeah, exactly. When Devin Allen got DQ. And it's like, you know, we do
rely on just Devin Allen, but all the times were like down.
Oh, right, really?
Normally like 1:06 were like 1:02.
Right, yeah.
And someone like him, who's normally like a 1:02, that's why he was under, type thing.
I know. We rely on these.
On a circuit with one of the, was it the Shocker? They threw a world record indoors. And it was, you was using a dodgy laser. Oh, it was at, maybe at, not a New Balance, at Millrose.
Really? Actually. But, you know, we do rely on this technology a lot, and it's just like,
yeah.
I guess it is the most reliable form, but in stuff where there's such fine margins, like, I don't know hurdling, so I won't claim I do, but 12:06. And what threw me off was, you know, when Sydney ran her world record, she was miles ahead of the next person.
Yeah.
And it's like, fair enough. You've run a ridiculous time. You've murdered the field. What threw me off is she was only a tiny bit ahead.
Yeah.
And she's run a world record, which according to like hurdlers and sprinters was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like 12:00 or whatever is outrageous. And if you ran that, you would be like a hurdle flight ahead almost. She wasn't. They were right behind her.
Mm.
You know, they're running 12:02 and stuff. And I was just like, well, there's no way everyone in the field's done that. But anyway.
Yeah, I guess it's still more accurate than hand time back in the day. Or you listen, you've got your sports day times as your PBs.
Oh, mate. But anyway, so I mean, the World Champs, don't get me wrong, was awesome. I absolutely loved it. And you know, it was almost a bonus. I was having to work through the night as well, because I was getting to watch it all as it was happening. So because I know pretty much everyone was experiencing it at 7 o'clock in the morning when they woke up, you know, plowing through a couple of hours of athletics before they go to work.
Well, the worst ones for me were the ones where I tried to stay up and then like
missed you it. Never, it's always it's bad like doing that.
And yeah. then well, there's no point in doing that.
It's never good doing that because you just don't enjoy it because you're so tired just sitting there. Like,
there have been champs where I have like fully switched over. I think it was, I try to, like, if I've got like not much on.
I can't remember. We were doing it for Tokyo, I think, but I don't think it was bad. I think it was like midnight and 1 o'clock in the morning and stuff. It wasn't as bad.
It was one of, I think Rio is fully.
Oh yeah, Rio. Yeah. Well, the good news is
on Rio time.
The good news is we got Budapest and Paris next, so that's literally going to be all our time zone pretty much. But mate, let's touch.
Yeah, upon, so I said we'll chat more about rounds. And yeah, World Athletics yesterday announced changes that are going to come in Paris 2024.
Yeah, and you're probably going to confirm these, but I just think, you know, the whole thing, they're adding an extra round basically for the small queues. They're scrapping small queues up to 1500.
Yeah, so let's make sure we don't murder any of this. So basically, from the 200 to the 1500, including hurdles.
Yep.
So I presume just the four hurdles. I presume that's there will be an extra round rather than a fastest loser qualification.
Yeah.
So the events will now have four rounds. Round one, a repeatage. I do not know how to pronounce
repercharge, it. Repercharge, mate. Repercharge, I think.
Mate, you corrected me on pronunciation. You sure? Anyway, that round that Matt said, I'm going to, yeah, what a day. Then the semi-final, then the final. And then the schedules will vary according to the nature of the event. The new format means that every athlete competing in the events will have at least two races at the Olympic Games.
Why? Why? The first thing I see this, I'm just like, what the hell? I think you even said as well, Lum, you said the one event where the small queues is an issue. In fact, probably one of the only events is the men's and women's 5K. That's the one event they've just left untouched, which is stupid. And oh my God, like.
For me, if you want to get rid of little queues, just add just more.
Get rid of them. Yeah, add more big queues. Just get rid of them. Yeah. That's what I thought they were going to do with the 5K, with all the fuss, but they haven't done it. They've left the 5K untouched.
We'll just have four rounds for everyone if you want to have more rounds.
This whole thing's stupid. Like, imagine watching a heat and then, okay, the big dogs go on to the semi-final, right? They're already big dogs. So they're already like better than
Jakob's got done. He's just ground. You're gonna make battered yourself come ninth, and you're like, oh, I've got to go again.
You're gonna make people who aren't as good then do another round to fight it out to get to the semi-final. And also, I'm thinking from a viewer's perspective, right? Do we really want to see a replay of the heats but worse standard?
Yeah.
Because let's put it as the heats are interesting because you're like, oh, how the big dog's gonna fare. Yeah, you're gonna get a few surprises, right? And then you're basically watching a rerun of the heat, but without the big dogs. Like, is that really going to be that interesting? Like, it's just going to be like, what a waste of time.
Like, it's like having a relegation playoff rather than a promotion playoff.
That would probably be, yeah. That, you know, I'm just thinking football terms. It'd probably still be quite interesting.
Yeah, we should do one of those podcasts.
You know what I'm saying though. It's just like, what's the point? And it's just then it's even more weight into the people, you know, the favorites. And I just think, what a waste of time. That is going to be, it's probably one of the worst ideas I've seen coming from.
Yeah, and I mean,
how big is that going to make the timetable? The timetable's already massive. Already last.
Well, I saw Carl Merber tweet this. He said, yeah, the schedule's too long as it is. Like, this is ridiculous. And he was like, we should just be focusing on highlighting our like top eight athletes more rather than like people, because he's like, at the end of the day, like, fair enough, like, we want athletes like to have a good experience and stuff,
but it's an honor to go.
But then I saw Mason Furlick commented he thought it was a great idea, and I was like, yeah, but yeah,
I don't mean it's a great idea at all. It's like you got to decide what the sport is. Like, is it elite or does it want to make it fair for everyone? Does it want to give everyone a chance to, you know? I think if you ask the athletes, do you want to like I imagine
I'm surprised there was athletes that think that's a good idea. I don't know,
but then the point is they're doing that, but then it's still going to be the same thing. To get from the semi-final to the final, it's still going to be the same as it's always been.
Yeah.
So it's like, you haven't got rid of small cues. You've just got rid of small cues in a heat.
Yeah.
What's the point?
Stupid.
Anyway, 10K times come smashing down. Almost too much. I thought it was high already. I thought that was a hard standard already. The marathon time, fair enough.
Yeah, the marathon one, I think we wanted that for a while. So yeah, the men's 10K is 27:10. The women's is 30:40.
Oh, that's great. That's gone from 31:25.
Yeah, that women's one's crazy.
What?
And then the men's marathon is 209:40, and the women's 2:28. Probably say that women's one needs to come down again.
Yeah, it's probably a bit too easy again. I mean, it was like 2:32 or something stupid, wasn't it? 2:30.
Yeah.
What was I going to say? But the only thing about the 10Ks, which I like the introduction of, is the whole world cross country thing. Oh, that was music to my ears when they said, if you come top eight in the world, because apparently that you have a cross country world ranking as well. So if you're top eight in the world over cross country or come top eight at the world cross, that basically is a qualification to the world championships.
Yeah, but what I don't like is they've also said that a 10K roads equal to a 10K track.
Yeah, I don't like that. Yeah, 20.
These 27:10s, they're going to just come from people running on the road on short courses.
No. It's not the time.
It says here. Originally I thought it was world ranking points. It says here, it is possible to qualify for the 10,000 meters through a 10-kilometer performance. And for world ranking purposes, the 10-kilometer road event is considered equal to the 10,000 meters.
Right. Yeah, that's a bit.
Which I think, given shoe technology in the past few years, is ridiculous, because we've seen some absolute crazy times on the roads that people cannot.
Short courses as well.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of courses out there which aren't. You know, I guess it will have to be ratified or whatever, but.
But there's a lot of ratified courses that I think people still like.
Probably are short. Yeah, of course. It must be.
And whether it's short or just a little bit of.
Well, you've got the whole
wind in certain directions.
The whole wind, yeah. The wind. Yeah. Unless you have a following wind for 10K, you know. I'm pretty sure the Valencia half goes out and back, and Kamora ran like. Oh, no, I think it was. Yeah, he ran like a 13 flat 5K on the way back.
Mm.
Split at some point. Like, no, just because the wind was following him home. Might have been a 10K road race. I'm pretty sure it was a half marathon when he ran ridiculous. But not sure about that. But the time, like the one time which needs to come down was a marathon. I think all the other standards are pretty high already.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, so I was surprised they decided to chop the 10K time even more. Like, unless they just want, my only thinking was.
The quote is 27, so I guess that. Maybe they want less athletes. Because I guess they've introduced them, so make them have an effect sort of thing.
Yeah, and I remember talking to a few people in the sport about it, and I think in sort of 5 years' time, they seem to be very big on displaying people's world rankings at this world champs.
Yeah.
They seem very big, you know, before every start, it was world ranking of such and such, you know, which is, we know in our sport, like, it's just absolutely irrelevant.
Yeah.
world ranking times.
But then if it comes to a point where they scrap qualifying time, say, then people will be forced to do big meets and forced to race throughout the season, which as fans is what we've been calling for a while. So.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Say 10 years time, there's no qualifying standards. It's just world rankings and they just take the top 27, say in the 10K. Obviously, that will be dependent on countries and people doing certain events.
The problem, yeah.
The forces
problem,
you to go out and think, where am I going to get ranking points? I'm going to race here. Da, 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 da. Yeah. And then I'll appear at all the big meets. Lots of exposure. Obviously, it's bad in terms of, we love it when we see like breakout, like junior stars, like run a qualifying time at a low key meet and then perform well.
You struggle
to do that. But then in terms of like comparing it to like your top sports, like that are watched, like obviously we've had Wimbledon recently and things like that, where rankings are massive in tennis. It is.
Well, most individual sports rankings are the number one thing, aren't they?
It's good to grow the top end.
Mm. Yeah, so that was interesting. I mean, to be fair, another thing on the champs was the graphics were And they had some weird graphics. I think we've already touched upon that, actually, haven't we?
Yeah, we chatted about
that. Yeah, I apologize. Goodness me. But yeah, so yeah, the new rules. Yeah, we thought we'd mention the new rules. Quite interesting. And I wonder if they will go ahead. You know, they've announced it. They're probably going to get quite a bit of backlash and stuff. So I wonder if that, you know, enforcing these rules will go ahead. I mean, I'm just thinking it from an 8 and a 15 perspective. But yeah, you're right. The timetable is going to be
steeple.
No, it's not the steeple.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sorry.
Steeple. But I'm just thinking, like, because I was thinking that.
Wasn't the five, yeah.
See, yeah. Another round of 8 and 15s, that's going to drag the timetable out. But another round of 2s, 4s, hurdles.
Think about people, I guess if you're going to double, you're probably, like, thinking you'd do well anyway, so you're not too worried. But
yeah, exactly.
Also, do you know what you could do?
What?
Could you like cheat the system? Say you just walk it.
Well, no. Say you're like, okay, say your world ranking is like really low, right? You've just snuck in. And it's like, well, it's going to take a lot for me to get out this heat.
Yeah.
What I'll do is I'll just walk around.
Then be pressure.
Yeah.
But even if you're the top guys, you can make it easier for yourself. So say you're someone who would qualify anyway.
You do two rounds and jog them. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Because like your second round is so easy then.
Yeah.
Like, say a Jakob Ingebrigtsen, I wouldn't don't think he'd do this because he likes to. How good he is anyway. But like he could, in theory, run a 4 minute 1500. Like, nice little tempo for him.
Do another one.
And then he'd probably only have to run. Because like, I feel like that round as well, no one's going to take that one up.
Yeah.
They're going to be like mental, like.
Yeah.
There'll be like 350s with like a closing 50. Yeah. on the men's side. So like you do that. Oh,
I don't get it. Yeah, I don't. There's a lot of flaws to it, and it's interesting actually. Like if me and Lam are completely wrong, and you think it's a great idea, send us a message, and it'd be good to hear like another.
Yeah, song. No, definitely. Because I would really like to chat to people who think it's a good idea and have
especially athletes.
Yeah, because and that's the whole point. As long as there's a. I guess a general consensus that it's a good thing. It does say, what does it say? I remember it said we consulted
they consulted the athletes or something, apparently.
Yeah, they definitely make that claim somewhere, but I can't find it. Probably so just taking it off because they definitely didn't.
Yeah. They want to get rid of the small queue, but we all know small queues are an issue in the 5K and in the sort of 3K.
Yeah, season. After consulting with athletes and broadcasters. We believe this is an innovation which will make progression in these events more straightforward for athletes and will build anticipation for fans. We'll give more exposure to our sport during the Olympic period and will be carefully scheduled to ensure that every event on our program retains its share of the spotlight.
To me, that whole round is a round that I just wouldn't be that interested in at all if I was watching it. I'm like, okay, big dogs have qualified. I'll just
see. Yeah,
I don't need to watch.
Say a Jakob just like falls over or something. He gets it. That's the only positive for it.
Yeah, but that's racing. That's
and they normally put them through anyway.
Yeah, that's racing, man. That's the beauty of our sport. You know, crazy things do happen. You know, so but yeah, that's a wrap for the World Champs. Next up, Commonwealth Games. Hopefully, England and the home nations will just be sweeping. And then obviously Euros, which actually I'm super excited for, the Euros in Munich. And when we talk about that, a Whiteman and Jakob rerun, you've got Katir and Mario Garcia, the top four at Worlds, can be top four at Euros. We're going to see them battle it out as well. And I think, you know, I'm excited to see what goes, you know, down in the 5K, who wins that for the Europeans. Because Europeans, to be honest, let's look at that men's 5K. We did not feature one bit. So I think the Europeans is going to be...
No, it was just Jakob. And then the only other Europeans in the final, I want to say, were Sam Parsons and Mark Scott.
Let's have a quick look, man.
Yeah,
you're correct, mate. You're correct, you know. And yeah, Parsons 15th, Mark Scott 14th. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens there at Euros. But yeah, so, and all of that is literally right around the corner. Commonwealth Games is next week. Europeans is the week after, pretty much. So it's going to hit us hard.
Yeah. Yeah, it's strange. It feels like even for us, it's like almost the turnaround's too quick. Like, I can't imagine what the athletes feel like.
I know. One of the saddest things, I think, I don't know if it was sad, but like the fact that Laura Muir and Jake Whiteman, like, they just couldn't enjoy.
Yeah.
When Jake was celebrating, you know, Jeff said, look, you got Commonwealth Games. And that was quite like a, you know, like a really kind of good clip, went viral and stuff. But it shows you kind of what makes a champion. But at the same time, I'm like, man, if I'm Whiteman, like, is that going to happen again? You know, but then I think that is what makes, you know, these athletes so good, is they can just carry on and dial it back in. Well, it's me and you. Oh, goodness me. I'd still be there now.
You'd be on a walk on Wednesday by half a second. It's like, right, Mackie's few beers.
I'd still be there now celebrating. But yeah, so I think they flew home the day or two after. I thought, man, that's a shame.
I don't got to get workouts in. That's the thing. It's
this is it. You know, when you do think
post-race session.
Yeah,
I would love to know if anyone's ever done a post-race session after winning a major title.
Probably Farah, when he's cleaning up doubles, and you know, back in the day, he's in a 10k and 5k. But yeah, anyway, so that's pretty much it for the wrap, and we get back on the guest episodes
very soon,
come Sunday.
Yeah, sweet. Right, hope you enjoyed this, and see you Sunday.